Welcome back to the Mastering Video Marketing Podcast. I'm Tony Rialli.
And I am Ben Carlson.
That you are.
Yeah.
Today, we are going to talk about how to start a six-figure video production company.
That's a big ask.
It is a big ask. Yeah. For some people, that's their dream goal. Yeah. For others like ourselves, that's kind of the bottom of the rung. Like,
sure.
If we went down to that, we would be doing something wrong.
That's fine.
So not to brag, but I mean, it's just as a point, when you start growing to a certain level as a company, you have to maintain a certain level in order to be at a certain level. You know, when I started Creative Edge out of my basement, it was just me.
Yeah.
That's all I needed to make money for. And I didn't have like studio rental. I didn't have any of that type of stuff. So that was fine. It was actually a side job. You know, I was working at a church at the time as their video director, and I had been buying camera gear left and right as a hobby. And I broke like the $5,000 threshold of equipment that I had purchased, which now it seems funny. Like I'll spend $5,000 on a lens. But at that time, I'm like, well, maybe I should start a company just to be able to write it off.
Sure.
So, you know, tax benefits and all that. And then I had the website. I had started building my portfolio. I did a couple small jobs here and there, but then I had a company out of Chicago reach out and just said, hey, we're looking for a video production company. And I remember the first time doing that, I was scared to death. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. My gosh. And went there, set up the first shot, and stepped back from the client monitor. And they looked at it, and they're like, this looks great. Let's roll. And, you know, subsequently after that, it was like, okay, I'm a little bit more comfortable. Maybe I do know what I'm doing. And then after a while, it just becomes like breathing, you know, like the whole riding a bike analogy, where it's like, you don't even think about it. You just set it up. And the more environments that we've shot in over the years, the easier it is. You kind of have like a mental Rolodex of like, in this scenario, we did this. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
It worked that well last time, you know? And so sometimes that gets a little boring because you've just done so much, but then there's always that new challenge that comes along. And it's like, all right, let's figure something out new.
Sure.
I'll give a really quick example. Just yesterday morning, I was talking to a client, and they're interested in doing a project for some new affordable housing apartments that are going to be coming to Green Bay here. And they had some nice 3D renderings of the apartments, but those locations weren't they didn't have the 3D models anymore. I don't know exactly what happened, but they
just had the image file, but not the actual 3D file.
The rendered, so no video, no models, no nothing. And as we were talking, they were like, "We'd really like to have a walkthrough of this location." And I said, well, you know, to rebuild, and they had a fairly tight timeline on this. You know, the main press release is going to be coming in a few weeks. So, that's why we're going to have a short episode today. We got to give. But they wanted to do some sort of a walkthrough, and so I said, well, for us to rebuild those models from scratch, texture them, everything like that, we can do it.
Ooh.
It's going to take some time,
and
it'll be a lot larger budget.
Yeah, and our director of post-production is probably going to be very angry with us to throw
him
even more.
He loves tight turnarounds.
Yeah.
Never a problem. So he's as we're talking about it, I said, I've been doing some research into AI-generated depth mapping from, taking an image and running it through an AI depth mapping software that allows you to then do a kind of a subtle, kind of a 2.5D.
Sure.
You can add some parallax or some gentle push-ins and stuff like that. And I said, I think we could do it for a much smaller budget, and it'll still give you that look of depth. We won't be able to do a full walkthrough, but it'll get them a good chunk of the way there. That's better than just doing like a Ken Burns little pan tilt on it. And they were very receptive to that. Now, I haven't played around with it much. I have a general idea of it, so we'll have to experiment. But it's those things where it's like, okay, this is a chance for us to try something new, and it could be a really great solution going forward. So.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why I'm always watching YouTube videos. I'm always researching, and there's always that opportunity to try something new. And that's honestly what excites me the most about this job.
Absolutely. And just a shameless plug here. Check out if you haven't been onto our YouTube channel, you will get to see you will get to see the progress that we've made from starting in the basement, 13 years ago, and leading up to where we are now at a six-figure company, and you know, we've talked about this many times, even here on the podcast, where a lot of what we did and a lot of what we've done is digesting just gratuitous amounts of content, just poring over, researching, trying to take everything. And our goal has always been to take everything that we've learned, condense it into one spot so we can say, here you go, our viewer, come along on this journey with us. Let's make this easier for you so you can hopefully improve your skills and continue on. So again, shameless plug for Next Wave DV. If you have any questions, if you're like, oh, I don't even know where to start, or I'm not anywhere near that six figures yet, that's a great place to start, is checking out, because it's not just, oh, some guy's talking about video stuff. It's us digesting and bringing back out what we've learned. And I say we, mostly you and Sean.
And then going back to that whole six figure thing, and why, like, even just getting to six figures now or going down to it only would be a challenge for us, is because we have such a great team of experts. Mm-hmm. You know, I have learned a lot over the years, and I've tried to get a good understanding of a lot. Like, I've done animation in After Effects. I've done a lot of, I do a ton of editing, you know, but that doesn't mean that's the main thing that I consider myself primarily competent in. And there are people that do it better, and there mm-hmm. are people that can focus their energy on it. Like, for example, Quinn is one of our editors, and he does our short form content, for which has become a very big model for us this year. And I work with him for several months to come up with a format that we liked, that was replicatable, that would work well for us and for our clients. And we figured it out, and he's done a great job with it. And the same thing for a lot of our Next Wave DV content. I edited it for years.
Sure.
And now I've been handing that off to Quinn, and he brings a new level of energy to it. Mm. Like, after I'm done shooting it, it's exhausting. Yeah. I have to come up with the idea, come up with the outline. Sometimes I'll do a full script. Sometimes I'll just do an outline, then I got to set all the camera gear up, shoot it, keep my energy up, and then by the time I'm done with that, I'm just like, let's just get it done. I try to do as much as I can to maintain a good energy, but a lot of times it's just, I'm ready to be done.
Yeah.
So handing it off to Quinn, I get a much better result, for sure. Like, he does such a great job, and he kind of brings a fresh energy to it that I wouldn't have.
And he's not even in the room while we're saying this. This is.
We'll force him to watch the episode. or he may turn this into shorts. So, same thing for you. Like, you know, I love working with clients. I love coming up with new ideas and stuff like that. But, like, you have a unique energy of, like, you love taking care of clients, make sure that they're appreciated and well taken care of. And I love the problem solving of how to accomplish that end goal on set. Yeah. Right? It's my favorite thing, is just to, you know, I consider the set, the production day, like, you know, like, it's like building a house. Like, we have an idea, we have a blueprint, mm-hmm. but we're going to run into problems, and now we got to fix them on the fly. Otherwise, you know, we're going to delay the shoot or whatever like that. And that's half the fun to me.
Sure. So what advice would you give to someone who's out there and maybe they're close to six figures, or maybe they're just starting out and they're saying, that sounds great. You have years of not, how do they get to a point, or what advice would you give them to be able to manage that expectation or that challenge?
So, yeah, we've talked a lot about our history thus far. So let's go back and start talking. Where do you start from? And fundamentally, I say there's three things to being a professional that are necessary. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't able to do these three things, then get to the point where you can do these three things, and then you're allowed to charge people money. That's my personal rule. Not everybody follows this, but these are my rules.
Yeah.
Number one is knowing how to get a good shot.
Mm.
Number two is having professional equipment to get the good shot.
Sure, to look the part.
And number three is knowing how to use that professional equipment to get the good shot.
Yeah, right.
And it seems simple, but the reason I break it down that way is because I've seen a lot of people over the years, you know, wannabe photographers or videographers that, like, get a decent, you know, an okay DSLR or whatever. They come along, they take an accidental amazing picture.
Sure.
And then somebody is like, you should be a photographer. You should whatever. And they're like, okay, sure. They don't even know exactly. I've met people that have been professional photographers for years that never put their camera on manual. And I mean, that's a big pet peeve of mine, because I get that you have some nice cameras and you got a couple mm-hmm. of good lenses or whatever, mm-hmm. but you need to know why that shot looked good.
Sure.
You need to know how to recreate that shot.
Yeah.
You know, I shoot available light and available, you know, in, you know, event stuff or just, you know, run and gun, But I love shooting with all my lights, and I have different lights for different reasons and different lenses for different looks. And I can walk into a scenario and be like, all right, we want this to look like nighttime and it's the middle of the day. All right, there's techniques I can do for that. Yeah. I want it to feel like a bright early morning golden hour lighting and it's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I know how to do that.
Yeah.
And that way we don't have to be at the mercy of the actual time of day.
Sure. How do you get to the point where you know how to do that, though?
Experimenting, for sure. You know, so the best time to experiment isn't always on set when a client's paying for it. Sure. Sometimes you have to do that, but like getting out and shooting and trying things out. So probably the best tip, the absolute best tip I could give anyone on starting as a videographer is just simply find something that you like online, either a movie that you've watched or a corporate video that you like, and try replicating, even if it's just one shot.
Yeah.
Try replicating that. And that's where, honestly, I got started in cinematography was I purchased a cheap $27 camera on eBay with a broken LCD screen, and I had some ideas for videos. And
that
I
you still have some, in your office.
I have it in my office, yeah. And I shot, I was like, I want to shoot. I had some ideas for videos. So I shot it and I went to the edit and I'm like, why does this look like, you know, crappy Handycam home video? And why does Hollywood look like Hollywood?
Yeah.
And I got really obsessed with that. And then I started learning about at the time, you know, depth of field adapters and lighting techniques and camera motion and all those types of things.
Sure.
And that was my obsession. So I tried experimenting and like, okay, let's recreate this shot. How could I do it if I don't have the Hollywood budget? What could I get? How close can I get to that?
Yeah.
And the more that you do that, the more you discover and realize things, you know, I've upgraded cameras, not because I had clients that demanded it, but when I felt I outgrew the look of a camera was when I remember going from a depth of field adapter to a DSLR, going to the 5D Mark II. The DSLR revolution, everybody and their brother that was shooting video had a 5D Mark II. And that jump from, at the time it was an XHA1 with a Red Rock M2 depth of field adapter. And then going to the 5D Mark II, I was like a jump in quality and clarity low light capabilities. Everything was amazing about it.
Yeah.
Then I jumped to the FS700 and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much more detail. Like I look back at the footage from my 5D Mark II and it looks noisy and pixelated and compressed and you know, mushy. And at the time I thought it looked amazing.
Right.
Again, fast forward to getting the Odyssey 7Q 4K recorder for my FS700. And it was like, this is a new camera.
Right.
Like all the AVCHD compression on it looked, you know, completely different. The ability to shoot RAW, 4K ProRes, all that. And then again, I upgraded to a Red and I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, so at every single time, like at that moment, I'm like, this is the perfect camera for me.
Yeah.
And then I eventually started to notice elements of it that were I'm ready to outgrow it and ready to accomplish more.
And if I may interject, you know, we're taught, this is, you know, this leads right into point number two of buy professional equipment. And, you know, something that as I was starting out, we were, you know, talking to you about how, what camera should I get? Is it Canon? Is it Nikon? What's the best? And you gave some great advice. One, invest in what you can afford and invest in the tool that is going to be for the job that you have right now. I did not need a full frame, you know, sensor camera with, you know, a giant zoom lens. I needed something that I could pick up and understand photography and start shooting clients effectively and professionally and still have a good look. And the other thing you said was don't waste your money on the body. It really doesn't matter. You're going to replace that anyway. Invest in the glass. And I think that has been my biggest difference in photography and videography is when I go to a professional quality glass, the images are noticeably different. They're sharper, they're cleaner. Those are the jaw dropper images where I was like, why does this look so stinking good? It's because, you know, I had a good piece of glass. And yes, you can drop thousands of dollars on glass. But if you are starting out, you're saying, well, where do I start? Where's a good? Get a Nifty 50. That you'll see them in all of the blogs. You'll see them everywhere. Just a 50 millimeter prime lens. I still shoot weddings. I've done entire weddings with just my prime 50. Now, I went and got a 51.4 just to give me a little bit more flexibility. But that's exactly it. When I got to the point that I outgrew the capabilities of that lens, that's when I upgraded. when I outgrew, you know, I started doing astrophotography and night photography and long exposures, and that crop frame sensor didn't make sense anymore, then it was time to upgrade. But you don't, if you just jump in and you say, all right, you know, I spent $10,000, took out a small business loan, spent $10,000, which honestly is, yes, we'll get you started, but there's still a long way to go. And you say, all right, I have professional equipment, bada bing, bada boom, six figure company. I think that leads into the last point, which is how do you use it?
You know how to use it. Yeah. You know, going back to your earlier point, I'll give another example. Like when I had sold my house, I had sold it with my home theater system, and I was ready to get another home theater system. And so I was doing some research, and I felt like I had outgrown the home theater in a box.
Yeah.
And so I decided to piece together my own system using clip speakers and a Denon AVR and a Monolith amplifier. And, you know, all said and done, it was around a, you know, $10,000 audio system. And I had a buddy of mine that had just built his first home theater come over to my house. And he had probably about a $1,500 home theater system. And I plopped him down and I cranked it up and let him listen to it. And I said, do you hear a difference between yours and mine? He's like, no. I'm like, great. Then you have exactly the right home theater system. Because I do. I hear a huge difference. I know what's different about it. I could tell you exactly what's different about it.
Sure.
Not going to make you feel bad about yours. But like, again, at a previous point, I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have appreciated it. But now my ears have attuned to the point where it's like, I can't not have it without it being distracting to me. And, you know, that's may sound, you know, like pompous or whatever like that. But frankly, that's the perfect time that it's time to upgrade.
Yeah.
Because when you feel like you're being limited by your current equipment, that your ideas are jumping beyond the capabilities of your tools, great. That's the time to upgrade.
Correct.
Because that's the point where you're saying, like, I know how to use my equipment, and my equipment is no longer keeping up with me.
Right.
So it's time to upgrade.
Yeah.
But let's hop back into growing your company to that level. Where do you start? Well, the big things that the most important advice I can give is grow your portfolio.
Yeah.
Because companies don't care what you can do. They care what you have done.
Yes.
And if you don't have a good variety of content on your portfolio, I mean, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, you know, when we're talking to a new client and they're saying, all right, we have this idea for a project, we are going through our portfolio and going, well, do you like this one or do you like that one? We'll still go and find other videos that might be a way of stretching into a different style than we've done.
Sure.
But for the most part, they definitely care about what have you done.
Yeah.
And we need to demonstrate that we have those capabilities. So, you know, we never say work for free.
Right.
That's not a great place to start unless you're doing like something for a nonprofit or like a film or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, I'll nip this one around the butt. I'm not a big fan of short films as a place to showcase your portfolio. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good place to hone your skills as a cinematographer and maybe as a storyteller.
Yeah, sharpen your
craft. But it's a totally different thing than corporate video.
Yes.
And they don't translate over, in my opinion. I feel like they're dramatically different.
And I would say, so, you know, speaking specifically about a video marketing agency, yes. But also, even if you're just trying to get into wedding videography or journalistic style, you know, run and gun shoot, that is a very different feel than a full out production. Even if it's a short film, that's going to be a very different. And if you're trying to practice those skills and you're saying, well, I just want to learn anything I can. Great. Go for it. But just know that, it is going to be different and you are going to have to hone in those skills that you're trying to develop to pursue that career towards a video marketing. Cause you know, if you're shooting a noir thriller with, you know, your friend who wrote it at a coffee shop, again, nothing wrong with that. That is going to be very different than shooting for a multi-million-dollar international corporation.
And frankly, most of those corporations can't see the forest for the trees. They can't see past that and think, oh, well, he can tell my dry corporate video when he demonstrated that he can do a slasher film.
Like, yeah.
No, that doesn't translate. Yeah. So
if I can just interject one more thing, I just want to clarify. We've talked about this before and we'll keep on talking about it. I am not a fan of working for free. I have done shots where I have paid myself. And I think that's the biggest thing is if you can pay yourself your time and it's worth your time to do it, then that's a project worth taking on. If you're just going out and shooting, if you're shooting for the fun of it, great, go for it. But if you're really trying to hone in your craft and someone says, hey, I have this idea, if you want to pay yourself for it, then I would take it on and use that as the barometer. If you're saying I would not pay myself to do this project and they're not going to pay me, that's probably not the project that you're going to, it's probably not even going to be your best work. So why chase after it?
Yeah.
Spend your time, getting networking, connecting, qualifying leads, trying to find new projects that you could work on better.
Right. And so the two times that I would say, and I don't consider it working for free per se, but like the two examples of free work or working mm-hmm. for less or whatever would be spec work. You know, if you have an idea for like a really cool car ad or something like that, well, yeah, you put in the effort, you know, partner with a team of people that can help you execute it. And that's a great opportunity. I've never done my own spec work. Because the option that I prefer is what I'm about to talk about. I know some people that have done a ton of spec work and it has resulted in big work for them.
Yeah.
So again, going back to people don't, you know, clients don't care what you can do, they care what you have done. So having that library of spec work, even if you've never done, it's not a real BMW, they were never your client, but you did a really cool ad for them. Okay. That helps.
Yeah.
But what I prefer to do is basically upgrade the clients.
Yes.
You know, you get you paid for the one bedroom, and now you're going to get the master suite.
Yep.
And that for us helped tremendously.
That's how we grew.
How we grew to a 6-figure company very rapidly and approaching 7-figure. We're getting close.
Hey.
So in that realm, basically what I'm saying is like, say you get a client that comes to you and has $5,000 for a video project, and you have an idea for something that's, you know, more than that, $10,000, $20,000, whatever. You know, maybe it's don't quadruple your time, but like, you know, maybe double is kind of a good rule of thumb.
Sure.
And go ahead, say like, I'm willing to do this. You know, don't establish it as like a standard, but like, you know, figure out that negotiation with them and saying like, we're willing to put in this extra effort for whatever reason. You know, we want to grow a portfolio. We want to develop a partnership. The challenge, of course, always is you don't want to establish a dynamic with the client where they're just always expecting that level every single time they're not going
to
pay for it.
You do not want to be known as the bargain basement video. Right. Yeah.
Right. But I can't tell you how many times we were, you know, because the problem is if your portfolio only has $2,000 work in it, you're going to keep getting $2,000 work.
Yep.
So if you get a $2,000 job and you put in $4,000 worth of work and then a client that wants to do a $4,000 job comes along, all right, now they've seen examples of that and they're ready to move up. And then that keeps going. And eventually, you know, again, it's not a matter of necessarily working for free. It's upgrading the client so you have that in your portfolio. And you're walking away with a paycheck and you're not doing like a whole free spec ad or whatever. I prefer doing it that way.
Yeah.
And you know, it also results in a client getting a product that they're going to use and benefit from and care about.
Sure.
So that's probably the most of everything that we're going to talk about. That's probably the most important thing is really, really focus on your portfolio. I don't know that there was anything beyond that was more important than building a solid portfolio.
Sure.
Everything else beyond that is going to be marketing techniques.
Yeah.
You know, refining your website, updating it. The biggest thing beyond that, you know, we have a great portfolio. We're very happy with it, and we're always trying to grow it. You know, our internal rule of thumb is we want every project we do for a client to end up on the portfolio page.
Yeah.
Now, that isn't always the case, you know.
But it is a great framework for mindset of everything that we do, we want it to be a showcase of our work. And that holds the bar much higher.
Yep. But the big thing that we did a few years ago post-COVID, as we were trying to decide how do we stay relevant as a video production company, because, you know, frankly, cell phones are getting better and better at shooting video. You know, a lot of companies are having more and more of their internal video departments because they value it. They recognize the importance of it. And, you know, fundamentally, you know, we were reliant on the competency of the client to take the video that we would give them and do something decent with it. Like, you know, it would be like, you know, buying a really nice truck.
Yeah.
And all you do is you drive it back and forth to work. You never put a piece of plywood in the back or anything. And you're like, well, this was a waste of money. Yeah. I should, you know, trucks are a waste of money.
It's like, I like my truck. It's a cool truck, but it really doesn't do anything what I need.
And you literally, you wouldn't, if a person said to you, trucks are a waste of money, no one should buy a truck. You would be like, well, that's dumb. Yeah. A lot of people need trucks.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't use it right doesn't mean that it wasn't worth it. But it's funny like how a lot of people get into that mindset. If they don't use the tool the right way, they blame the tool. And so for us, we're like, we need to go back to the drawing board and show our client, help our clients, offer services within in-house that can really create the proper marketing structure. And so when we first did video, it was always about how do we want people to feel after the video's done? And that's still a very important question to ask. What is the emotion? What is the draw? What is that call to action we want them to have? And now we're going like another step back in the conversation with our clients. And we say, why do you want video in the first place? What are you planning on doing? Is this brand awareness? Is this direct response? Is this a marketing campaign? Is this social media? Where is the video going to live? All those types of things. And that dictates the creative first. So the shift that we've gone through, I say, is basically, you know, in the past we were creating creative driven content.
Yeah.
And today we're doing results driven content.
Correct.
It's not that we never did. In fact, we just recently had a project where the client's like, you know what? We need a great looking video.
Make it look like an art gallery.
We can do that. Absolutely.
Fun.
But more often than not, when we lead with results-driven content and we're focusing on how is this video going to grow your business, going to grow your sales, grow your brand, whatever it might be, suddenly clients are just like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
You know, that we've gotten so much more business from that perspective. And it's allowed us to grow into retainers more easily. It's allowed us to really spread a message of like, this is really how you should approach a video.
Yeah.
And it gives us more to talk about in our content. Like I can, you know, Next Wave DV for years was just how we make pretty pictures. And and now we've kind of shifted our focus into like, here's how to really effectively use video.
Yeah.
And it's amazing just that dynamic shift when we talk to a business, because I would say maybe 10-20% of the time when we talk to a business, we're clicking with a creative. Like they get the vision that we're talking about.
And how much of that, even if we get the creative that we get to speak to, they have to verify it and check it with someone who is
they're oftentimes not a decision maker.
Yeah.
That might even be less of a percentage.
Yeah.
So that other 90% of the time, we are getting a person that's just dollars and cents, metrics, you know, boom, boom, boom. It amazes me how many directors of marketing don't seem to have a really creative bone in their body.
Yeah.
And so if we just come at them like with this big idea, they're like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
how is that going to actually do anything? But when we come with like, this is the effective tool to use this. And, you know, when we speak that language, when we're talking about ROI and not how big or cool a project is, it just clicks.
Yeah.
And we're suddenly justifying budgets that were possibly stretching them beyond what they were originally anticipating. Correct.
In fact, we just had that recently where, you know, we had a client that was really, you know, even into the discovery meeting where we were talking about content strategy and developing that, very hesitant, where it was like, that is a lot of money to be spending just to try and get one person in the door. And when we sat down, when we sat down and we showed them, all right, if I told you that I could get you $10,000 and all you had to do was give me $2,000, direct transaction, you give me $2,000, I give you $10,000, would you take it? Well, yeah, of course. He said, now we can't guarantee results. Of course we can't guarantee results, but what we are talking about is a numbers game. And we know that with the results that we've seen, if you put in this much investment, you will receive this much in return. And putting it in that framework of, okay, this is an investment into my advertising to see a return. If we had just said, oh no, yeah, I get, you know, I see your budget is a little bit lower. Let's just come up with a lower budget concept, which is what we had done. It was like, and we still do sometimes, but having the conversation of that return on investment gives the people with financial instead of creative forward, it gives them something to chew on and something to hold on to where they say, okay, I can process this information a lot better than I can some beautiful style sheet. And, you know, here's the list of days of production. I guess that equates this somehow. Mm-hmm. No, if you can really hone in on hard dollars, that is going to make a huge difference in the conversations that you're having with the decision makers that are actually going to be approving those budgets.
Right. Yeah. And what Ben's talking about is the cost of customer acquisition.
Yeah.
And that number is really important when you're doing your marketing, because that dictates where we should be targeting. And the way that we calculate it, we have a basic formula that we follow. Basically, we say, all right, what's the lifetime value of a customer? And typically, we'll average that out across 2 or 3 years, depending on the type of customer, the type of business you are. It's every, you know, for some people, you know, if they're selling a widget and it's a one-time widget, okay, mm-hmm. well, that's your lifetime value. But if it's a repeat business, if it's consumable, if it's you know, entertainment, whatever it might be, you know, that oftentimes will have a longer lifetime value to a customer. And so you have to calculate that. You can't just be like, all right, the customer showed up one time, that's it. You know, no, we have to focus on lifetime value of a customer. So we have lifetime value, and then we talk about the margin. So to have that lifetime value of a customer, what is the cost? You know, is your cost 90% and, yeah. and you have a very small margin? Is it much smaller and you have a larger margin?
Yeah.
That margin is super important, because we try to keep the cost of acquisition of a client to be under 33% of that margin.
Yeah.
And that formula is the most important thing you can have in your marketing, because if you're, let's, you know, so let's say like for arcade, where we, you know, our average ticket price transactions in the $50 to $100 range for like a group of people to come in. And if we say across, you know, 2 or 3 years, maybe people come in for their birthdays. So we'll say maybe $300 is an average lifetime value that for an arcade customer. And then, you know, we've got, you know, staffing, location costs, electricity, insurance, the licensing of the games, the, you know, the hardware repair. So we might say out of that $300 that, $150 is our margin, just mm-hmm. roughly. So $150, a third of that would be $50.
Sure.
And so our goal in our marketing we should have a cost of acquisition be under $50. Now, if we look at just, you know, the one-time customer coming in and it costs us $50 to get a customer, and we're like, well, that was a waste of money. So, you know, okay, well, but we have to look at over lifetime value.
Yeah.
The other side of it, too, is if we're like, well, it costs us $20 to get a customer, well, that's great. You know, yeah. we're actually in a healthy spot. So, you know, that if you're not looking at that number, you know, how do you know?
Yeah,
is it right. should it be $5? Should it be $100? Like I don't know.
And one thing that I've noticed with a lot of our clients is they have no clue about that number heading into it. And that's why it's so important as professionals to be able to have that information, to be able to lead them, because now they see you not just as a creative, but as a value added service where you can be a partner in helping me to understand things that I don't necessarily understand. And if you're listening and you're like, Tony, you are talking gibberish, what are you talking about? Feel free to like this video, subscribe, and we're going to have a lot of content where we can kind of go through. In fact, we've already talked through quite a bit of this, where we talk through exactly how to have those conversations, what those conversations even look like, and why they're so important.
Absolutely. And another thing too, quick plug, if you haven't checked it out already, our Video Pathfinder webinar,
yeah.
we really break down how to create an effective social media content strategy. So, you know, going into that, you know, how to build a six-figure business, that content strategy that we map out for our customers just like opens their eyes to, all right, this is where I should be spending my marketing dollar in social media. And it makes it so much simpler, because in the past it was like, should we do an ad?
Yeah.
Should we do, you know, this way we really map it out in a very clear and easy to follow method. So
yeah.
Now use the Video Pathfinder as a tool for, if you're a professional, use it,
yeah.
check it out. And well, if
whether you're a creative that's running your own marketing company, or if you're at a marketing department within a company and you're just, maybe you're spinning your wheels trying to convince people like, this is how we need to be moving forward, this is the steps that we need to take. This lays out and gives a lot of language. Again, going back to, we've taken a lot of time researching, studying, and developing this system so that way you can take it and it's easy to disseminate and make sense of, and then regurgitate out to the people that you need to get it to.
So yeah, videopathfinder.com.
Shameless plug.
Yeah. So going back to real quickly as we wrap up, the when we talk about cost of customer acquisition, well, what where do those costs come in? Is it just like I ran an ad and then my my average return on ad spend or ROAS was $50? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
We try to blanket that across what the industry term called MER, or either media efficiency ratio or marketing efficiency ratio. We go by marketing. And that's where you kind of blanket everything. So if you're doing a podcast and you're doing billboards and you're doing radio ads and you're doing social media ads, you know, how do you calculate? Because it's so easy to be like, what is the thing that converted?
Yeah.
So and sometimes in marketing we'll say, what was the last thing that converted a customer over here? That should get all the credit. And sometimes in marketing, you say, what's the first thing that introduced them to your company? Yeah. That should get all the credit.
Yeah.
It's really hard to quantify that across the board if you have a very wide social media or advertising system. So,
and hopefully it's broad enough that there's about five other things that they've come across before they even get to that final one. So which one gets it?
Right. And so that's why it's so important to kind of have a metric like MER, because then that's the thing that we can go against with our cost of customer acquisition. We would take the entire marketing budget for a year for a company, and then we would divide that, you know, across the new customers acquired, and that would be your average cost of customer acquisition.
Yeah.
And you know, and then we also want to look at like repeat business. Are we capitalizing on that? And so we don't have time to get into all those things, and we have talked about them in another podcast, and we'll talk about them again.
Yeah.
But I would say that in summary, that's it. That's how you get to a six-figure company. You start off with experimenting, learning the craft, getting comfortable with how to shoot video, how to shoot great looking video, and then so once you get good at the look, then you start focusing on how to create content that gets results for my customers.
Yeah.
And if you can do both of those, you are an absolutely huge asset to your company and all your clients, and they will keep coming back to you.
Yep, exactly.
All right. This was fun.
This was great.
I don't think we got time for a pop culture corner because we just went on. So we got another meeting we got to.
Yeah.
So next time.
Next time.
Next time.
I want to talk about Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot. I watched Dungeons & Dragons. So. That was pretty good.
Okay, we might have a pop-up pop culture corner.
We'll save it for the next episode.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay.
All right. But thank you so much for watching.
It's great.